of the crop.
Welcome to the 144th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher. Now the permanent replacement for another soul lost by the corporate beast that Arsenal Football Club have become, and not prepared to fake interest in the club anymore. So hello, Mark Ollington, if you are listening. Those of you with long memories will recall our original host, Lord Ashburton, went the same way a number of years ago. So you've got me in the hot seat until a better candidate comes forward, volunteers welcomed. We are recording on the Monday evening after the 2-0 victory away to Bournemouth, which took the team to third place in the table ahead of Manchester City, but looking up at Leicester and Spurs. It was a welcome first Premier League win after four matches with three draws and a defeat. I'll keep the panel introductions fairly brief this evening as there is plenty to discuss. I'll start with one of our more regular panellists, normally the subject of ridicule for either his tattoos, his love life, or his penchant for answering his own questions in his spell as the host of this very podcast. Now he's on the side of a table where he can spew forth without worrying about stealing anyone's thunder. It's a very good evening to Mr. David Udo.
Evening, Gaffer. Thanks for having me.
And next up, we've had him on once before some time back, but it's good to hear a reasoned voice once again. He has something in common with Stan Kroenke. Is it a toupee? Is it a skin condition? Is it the ability to piss off Arsenal fans in significant number? No, he's an Arsenal shareholder. As one of the dwindling number who can genuinely claim the club belongs to them, it's a pleasure to say hello again to regular Gooner contributor, Mr. Bernard Dowling.
Good evening.
And last but by no means least, an old friend of the Gooner and always a welcome guest on the panel. He's been watching Arsenal for something like 50 years and started taking photos of matches professionally at the tail end of the Bertie Mee era. He has a habit of appearing behind the goal or even on the pitch in some of the more vintage football videos you will see on YouTube, armed with his trusty camera. He has more stories than a drunk in the pub, but they are always worth hearing because the man has been there, done it, and bought the T-shirt. The man who founded the Offside Photo Agency and a lifelong Gooner, it's a very warm welcome back to Mr. Mark Leach.
Pleased to be here, Kev. Lovely introduction, that.
Thank you.
I was that drunk in the pub quite often.
Okay, so we have just seen Arsenal get 3 points at Bournemouth yesterday. And my first question is, in your instincts after watching football for all these years, David, are Arsenal back on track?
Worryingly, I don't think so. We won yesterday, but lots to read into that. I mean, it was our first goal in, 364 minutes, which is slightly worrying. And we were playing on a five-a-side park, to be honest, in that tiny village stadium somewhere on the south coast. And I don't think we got out of second gear. Yeah, we got those two goals in 90 seconds. People were like, you know, that will do. And if ultimately you're... ignore the Sky man of the match, that doesn't matter at all. But I mean, our Arsbog man of the match and most people's man of the match was our goalkeeper again. So I think that reads a lot into it. I mean, look, the title could and should have been ours this year. But with our squad getting all the injuries, we had the same 11 out every week for 2.5 months. And they're just knackered now. Yeah, Sanchez is coming back, but he needs to get used to it again. Apparently Welbeck's coming back. But Danny, if you're hearing this, if you could get in touch, you and Jack, we would be really pleased. Thanks a lot. But ultimately our first 11's knackered, so it's gone.
Bernard, some people would say the three draws and a defeat were the kind of blip that happens to every side during a season. There's an argument that we just needed that win to get going again.
I wouldn't say that because I wouldn't say we needed it to get going. I think that was a pretty disastrous run because I think we should and as well as could have won the league this year. But I expect the opportunity to be wasted now. Yesterday's win was important in as much that we're at least back to having a chance. And should we beat Leicester next weekend, yeah, I think we'd certainly be back in it full-time then. But I'm concerned, I have to say, about Tottenham. You know, I think they have an absolutely brilliant manager. Pochettino impressed me at Southampton, and he's impressing me even more at Tottenham. And, you know, he's got them playing so well, and I'm frightened Tottenham are going to do it.
Okay. I'm correct in saying that Wenger's never beaten Pochettino. Got a couple of draws against him. I don't think he's beaten him at Southampton or Spurs.
I haven't played him that many times, but you could well be right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Mark, I'm assuming you were working at the Chelsea-Man United game yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Did you actually, were you able to catch any of the Bournemouth game?
I was only on Match of the Day 2, and I was on the train coming in expecting the worst, and when you come out, got out at Earl's Court, and Arsenal were 2-0 up. I was amazed, you know, very pleasantly surprised, but you're still checking, thinking, is it going to be 2-2? I think everyone was, well, all the headline writers were ready for Benicophobe to stick one past us. And we could have had a right good rant tonight, couldn't we? I mean, it might not stop David anyway, but we could have really piled in on that one tonight. Who knows? Had Flamini gone with a red card, we could have been the same. You know, do you remember Arsenal used to go down to 10 men? It used to happen every week. We must have had a plan in training. When we go down to 10, this is what we do. But the Chelsea game, I'm sorry, it took them about half an hour to recover. And I think certain players went missing in that time. Very disappointing. If the same had happened at Bournemouth, we could be sitting here thinking, you know, I was ready. You said to me Friday, come on. I was ready to say, the title was ours to lose. We've lost it. But now, no, I believe, I'm thinking that Hiddink got his homework done on Arsenal. And it was like Mertesacker getting that channel between him and Bellerin. It paid off. When are Arsenal going to do the homework? And watching Martin Keown, Match of the Day 2, he said, did the homework. Bournemouth like to stifle high tempo. Arsenal players were bombing on. They weren't playing in the midfield where they can get caught. Bombing on, taking out the midfield, a complete change in tactics, which is, I think, something we need to take to White Hart Lane, because if we're going to get caught in that pressing game, I'd love all the ammo we've got for pace to play like that the rest of the season. I thought it was hey, you know, if Wenger's going to win it, wouldn't it be funny all these years of playing 1-2s on the adjoining box, Alex Lebb, Fabregas, all that great football which went nowhere. We could be onto something with a bit direct. And I'm thinking with Wes Morgan and Robert Huth at the back, I think we've got a very good chance of beating Leicester. But I'd qualify that by saying we're going to beat them 4-0, send them into a tailspin and as you were saying, let Tottenham come up the rail and take it. But no, let's not mention Spurs again tonight, eh?
Well, I wish.
I was going to say, can I come in on that point about how we played great football a few years? I didn't enjoy it. I have to admit, I don't enjoy watching Barcelona much. And they're gods at that style of football. But tiki-taki or whatever it's called, football, I find it quite tedious, you know. Because the way Arsenal used to do it, in my view, it was Mertesacker passing it to Koscielny passing it back to Mertesacker passing it to, it would have been Sagner at the time, you know, back again. And it took about 30 passes to get into the opposition's half. Then it came back into our half again and, you know, probably went back to the keeper to start it all off again.
Well, worryingly, this was Man City and Leicester. I mean, Leicester's at the stance of you can have as much possession as you want, but when we get the ball, we're going to be, you know, incredibly effective, and they were. But, you know, City were sort of doing it, as you say, left back to right back.
Yeah.
Up a little bit, no, we'll come back again and
come
go
out the other way.
Again.
Yeah.
You do that, and the players there playing Game Boy.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the warnings were there for us teams doing that. The team I said I wouldn't mention again, the goal they scored at the Emirates was just a simple ball from the left back, dunked straight through a channel between Bellerin and Mertesacker again. Yeah. And that, don't think that problem seemed to be eradicated between, when was that, October, November and the Chelsea game. And now seem to have thinking, Gabriel's the man.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead a bit here. And the Pep Guardiola news has come since our last podcast. Just to go on a limb, do we think that we will be seeing a tick-attacker football as it is supposed to be played in the Premier League this season, or do you think it just won't work, or he won't even try it?
I think if he tries it, he's going to struggle a bit, because at Barcelona here, Xavi, Iniesta and Messi, and he's not going to have those three players anywhere else. He didn't have them at Bayern Munich, and he isn't going to have them at Manchester City either. And going back to my point about that style of football, I think Wenger tried to copy it with inferior players, and therefore it didn't work for Arsenal. I think if Guardiola tries it at Manchester City with inferior players, because however good some of their players are, they're not at the level of Messi and Iniesta, he's going to have some problems with it. I think it'll tell us a lot about actually how good a manager he is, because if he doesn't try it, I'll have a bit more respect for his abilities. If he does try it, though, with inferior players, I'll lose respect for his abilities as a football coach or manager.
David, do you think Guardiola, given that we think football fair play, financial fair play, has left the building, do you think Guardiola will just buy the best players out there for Manchester City in the summer?
I would have thought so. And I mean, look, that's the reputation he's built for himself at Barcelona, with a lot of money on them. Some midfielder called Fabregas or something, I keep forgetting his name. He did the same at Bayern Munich with a couple of clever buys. I mean, Lewandowski replacing Mandzukic up front, it seemed to change the team completely. He'll do the same at Manchester City. I mean, people don't seem to appreciate the fact that they're Chelsea in a slightly lighter blue, in the sense it's, you know, the billionaire owners throw billions of pounds, whatever the hell they want, and he'll do it like that. My big concern with Guardiola is that he's essentially had two spells at either Celtic or Rangers in respective countries, but now he's going to be taking part in a country where an unknown team from the East Midlands is going to come from nowhere in the league. So he's going to have to man up. And I don't think he's been tested that much in Spain or in Germany. So if they lose 4-1 at home on the first day of the season next year, it's going to open his eyes.
Okay. Are you a Guardiola fan, Mark?
Well, the teams he's produced, but I think David's saying they're a clever buy. I mean, Lewandowski was just how much do you want a week, like they got Neuer the year before, to flatten out any competition, you know, with Dortmund players and the right, you know, just to say, to take the players from them. He's not going to get that. And if you look, I'm not sure how it works in Germany, but in Spain, the TV deals, the big clubs get all the money. So there's no competition through the season. You're talking there about financial fair play, and something's just got me. I'm thinking, hang on, do I have to take it all back about the Premier League? Have we actually got the best system here, where you can only spend so much on players, and your second, third string, let's say Leicester coming in with all these players now, and everyone's saying this is amazing. You know, people are talking in Japan about doing a book on Leicester City. It's gone around the world, this story. And you've got, if you're a real football fan, you've got to say, we've got a great league here, and that's why we like it. We're not going to produce the Champions League winners. But is that what the end game is, or is it to have 38 sets of matches? Well, the bookies must be loving it, mustn't they? I mean, it's just, they must have coined it this year, mustn't they? Paddy Power. Unpredictable results turning up every week. And I think it's great. And as the guys are saying, I think Guardiola, he must already be looking at Leicester, the top of the league. Anything can happen. Norwich winning at Old Trafford, he's going to say, don't these guys know when they're beaten? What are they doing coming up here trying to win? It's every single 38 matches, you've got to be on your game. Maybe he fancies the challenge. Maybe he's thinking, that was, I've done it all, I fancy a go at this. And he might be the first one to say, wow, it's tougher than I thought. But he's going to be, it's not going to be egg in your face, he's going to have a lot of respect. And, you're saying he's not going to have those players, he could bring Messi, he could bring one or two with him, you don't know. Well, he could bring Lewandowski, he could bring two teams in with him. Yeah. But even so, I don't think it would guarantee you success in the Premier League, the way it's set up.
Well, as soon as he was offered announced that he was going there, the first thing that the wonderful Dimitri Seluk, the agent of Yaya Touré, said, well, he doesn't like my client at all, so it looks like Yaya's leaving in the summer. I'm guessing that Yaya didn't get a birthday cake this year or something and shit himself or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, like I say, Manchester City for me are Chelsea in disguise, and it's a bunch of egos there. So if Guardiola has to sort of, stamp down on a bunch of prima donnas like Nasri and co, part of me wishes him luck and hoping they finish fourth.
Well, it's players, I think the players have been in the academies. People say Man City go to the academy, but that lad Trippier, who scored the winner for the team I won't mention at the weekend, he was at Man City Academy and he went to Burnley. And maybe they're shopping around for the best in Europe, and maybe they have one under their nose. This, maybe Guardiola will bring what they've built at Barcelona, he might look all through that academy and say, all right, this season we'll sort it out, but I'm going to bring this team through from the academy, 21, 22 year olds, get the best players in there and build it, if he's given that time. It could be something he does.
The thing is, though, he has recently said he's not going to stop at any club all that long. No. You know, he's not going to do a Ferguson or a Wenger. And, you know, he was at Bayern Munich 3 years. He's won the Bundesliga twice. They're 8 points ahead, so it looks as though that he's going to win it three times on the trot. I'm not sure he's going to be at Manchester City long enough to actually do But what I think has made the English league more competitive is all the money, the television money's coming in, the sponsorships.
And the spread, though,
because
the spread. It's spread around.
I think a very good example is Everton turning down 35 million for Stones last summer from Chelsea. If that had happened 12 months ago.
Exactly, and it's probably good for Stones' career.
Chelsea's hand off.
It's good for Stones' career because he's realised he's played him too much and he's given him a rest. If they paid 30 million, he'd probably been chucked in the Chelsea team and had to play every week, and you're on your own, son.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, we get questions in from by Twitter and email from our listeners, so I'm going to try and do as many as I can this evening. Simon Rose is a regular contributor and often sends in a question for us. His tweet is, given Arsenal's title aims and rivals, what's the real story of the weekend? Leicester winning 3-1 at City or City losing 3-1? Now, I've translated that, and I think what he's really saying is which team is really the biggest threat to Arsenal's ambitions. So, in a way, I suppose it's, do we believe in Leicester or do we think Man City will inevitably come good? Who should we be more worried about?
If you were asking me that question next Monday, I'd be more certain of the answer, because if Leicester beats Arsenal at the Emirates, I think we're out of it and Leicester will probably go and win the league. If Arsenal win, I think Leicester could well fall just short still. If it's a draw, I think it'll be a terrific result for Tottenham or Man City.
Let's just bung Spurs into this as well, and I'm going to I think the best way to do this is to say, who do you think will win the title out of the current top four? Assuming you don't think Man United are going to come from nowhere.
No.
What you do now, you think Arsenal?
Next
do
question.
It?
No, I'm saying answering Simon's question was it? I think that if that match had happened, Leicester this. Real belief has come in, I think, in the last fortnight. If Leicester played Man City at home and lost 3-1 first week of January, we'd have gone, yes, thanks for that, Leicester. But now you're going, well, I hope City have got a backlash in them for Sunday against the team I won't mention. But I'm thinking now that Leicester, that was something. I think it's that Liverpool game, in a way. It was a ragbag. You couldn't call it at all, nil at half time. And just that Vardy goal, like we were saying earlier, out of nothing. You're thinking, if they can play like that, and he can bang a goal in from that distance in a nothing match, it wasn't a chance, was it? He made it himself. You're thinking, wow, what can't they do? The confidence is high. But, for Arsenal, I don't think we've got any players who've been in this position. We say the club has, the manager's been in this position to win the title. Then, Leicester never have. And Tottenham, it's going back a long way. But I mentioned them, sorry. But the, you'd like to think that Arsenal, it hadn't been so far the last title when you think, we know what to do in this position, as we've shown over the last 10 years. But no, I think Leicester are genuine contenders. I really do. I think Man City, obviously, they've got one more game. And this game, hopefully, they'll be finished by the time we go up there.
Okay. If you're a betting man.
I fancy Leicester are going to beat us, so I'm going to say I think Leicester are more likely to win it than anyone else. Okay. If we beat them, then I think Arsenal have a decent chance, but we have away games to come at places like Manchester United and Tottenham. And if, say, Tottenham beat us at White Hart Lane, then I can see Tottenham winning it. under Pochettino, because I've heard people say, oh, Tottenham will do their Tottenham thing and blow it. You know, Sol Campbell, to be fair to him, said it the other day. Under Pochettino, I'm not so confident that they will blow it this time. And I actually think Arsenal are more likely to blow it because of Wenger's philosophy. I think, you know, he has almost a let's blow it mentality sometimes as well. So I think Tottenham have more chance than Arsenal.
Okay. I'm not having that. I'm halfway through my second bottle of Bratislav
whiskey.
David, are you going to pick me a winner?
I tell you what, every romantic in the country would love Leicester City to do it, but I've got a vision of them doing a Devon lock, to be honest. And we won those games, four or five games before the end of the year. Jamie Vardy gets too excited, does a Flamini tackle, but he gets sent off in the same game when Mahrez goes down clutching his hamstring, and that's the two star players out, and the bench haven't got it. They lose their last three games, and they will get leapfrogged at the last minute. But that'll be by Manchester City. And by Man City, I mean Aguero, the best striker in our league by a country mile. And as he proved on Saturday, 10 players didn't turn up, but he still managed to poach a goal in the last minute.
So. I mean, what puts me against Manchester City is that without Kompany, they're fairly poor defensively. And I accept what you say, Aguero is brilliant and he can win it on his own. But without a defence, it's going to be difficult for them.
Well, they've got a very, very good goalkeeper. Okay, he makes me glad to be bald because I'm never going to buy Head and Shoulders ever again. Many thanks to Joe Hart. But he made a free kick save against West Ham a couple of weeks ago. I think that made Czech applause watching that. He's an unbelievable keeper. But no, I agree with you. They've got a dodgy back four.
The one thing about City got me, if you'd watched the game live, Leicester game, and seen it disappear bit by bit, I just watched the highlights, saw the three Leicester goals, then they must have cut 20 minutes or however. Aguero scored in an empty stadium.
Yeah.
The fans had all gone. You don't quite get the right vibe about City if, all right, you're 3-0 down to Leicester. And it's I never understand that, do you? An early kickoff. You wouldn't be in your seat normally at 3, and people are leaving at 2:30 or whatever. I don't get that. But I just feel there's something. I was heartened by that, to see all the fans desert. I thought.
Man City, the Chelsea, I know I keep using that analogy, and I'm very sorry about it. I mean, look at Chelsea in 1991, playing the converted Warren Green and Greyhound Stadium with 6,000 members of the BNP turning up to watch them. Now they're selling 45,000 tickets a week. Same in Man City. They're in the third division about 12 years ago with Jamie Pollock captain and scoring own goals, playing in front of 11,000 at Main Road. And they've managed to increase the capacity at Etihad up to what? Nearly 55, going for 60,000. Who's going to go there? The same football tourists who come to the Emirates every week.
I did notice that Chelsea, where I went on Sunday, the ticket touts warnings were up the week before, don't buy tickets off touts. I noticed on this lamppost this morning, it was written in Mandarin and Japanese.
Good God.
Do not buy tickets from touts.
Good God.
You're thinking, if you want to, and I don't know if you'll get onto that, if you want to do any boycotts, we know somebody will come in and take your seat, don't you worry. Yeah.
Well, I went to South Africa over New Year to see my best friend, and I missed the Newcastle game, and my cousin was supposed to be going, but he pulled out the last minute. And literally 2 days before the game, I stuck it on ticket exchange. The ticket, so I've got North Bank Upper, Row 3, not the most attractive seat in the house at all. It went in about 2 minutes to a Japanese tourist who, you know.
How do you know?
My dad said some Japanese bastard sat next to me.
I reckon a tout might have brought it and sold it to a Japanese person.
Is that weird? Excuse my ignorance. That's the first time I've sold something on ticket exchange.
Because it would depend how they bought it in a way. I suppose they'd have to have a membership card, but the touts can manage around that anyway. Let's stay on the theme of Leicester, because we've got a question from Jonathan Houseman. And he says, how do we beat Leicester and who plays at centre-back? Per is too slow for their pace and Gabriel is not amazing on the ball. Can Arsenal cope with Jamie Vardy?
Yes, I think we can. In answer to the question, I think Koscielny, he's a brilliant player, mainly when he plays alongside Mertesacker. when he's alongside anyone else, I don't think he's the same player. I think we saw it often with Vermaelen. Koscielny and Vermaelen, on paper, looked a fine partnership. In reality, or in practice, I think they were anything but. And I think Gabriel has looked a bit dodgy, but I think more important than that is the effect he's having on Koscielny, who I don't think has been playing so well as he used to when he was next to Mertesacker.
He's taking on a bit more responsibility, isn't
he? Yeah. So I would actually, my first choice central defence would still be Mertesacker and Koscielny. Not necessarily because of Mertesacker, with his lack of pace is a problem. I fully accept that. Although he's excellent in other areas of his game. You don't win 100 caps for Germany if you're rubbish. That's a fact.
Well, Podolski did, but anyway.
But I don't think he was rubbish to be
fair.
No,
just didn't fit.
Yeah, that's right. But the important thing about Mertesacker, or an important thing about Mertesacker, is the effect he has on Koscielny, because I don't think Koscielny is the same player when he's not when he's next to somebody else.
Well, I think I've got a clean plan, and I hope the Arsenal management team always listen to this podcast, so we know that. But I think if you're thinking we've got to keep Vardy quiet and Murray, we mustn't give him a sniff, If you go in that mindset and they score in the first minute, you're going to go, where's our game plan? I think you want to look for get the same result as we did up there. Is it called Filbert Street and where they play? Mm-hmm. I reckon we want to go for a 5-2 victory and just figure they're going to get a goal from somewhere. They're going to get a goal and open it up and give them. And we're worried about our defence. But as I said before, with Morgan and Hoof, let's get amongst them. If we kind of play a tight game, they could nick it. A goal out of nowhere, because unlike us, they shoot from anywhere. And I think Arsenal should really, just go for it. Go for it. And we'll outgun you, we'll outrun you, we'll outpace you, we'll go longer than you. And just don't think, we could win it 4-3. Yeah. I don't think you're going to nick that one 1-0, 2-0.
What worries me greatly, though, is the way Arsenal have started many recent games so slowly. They basically waste the first half and, then pick up in the second 45 minutes. And I want them to start with a high tempo.
Do you think,
right from the first
minute? Do you think they do that, but they don't go out and say, who we got today? Like Sunday morning football. I mean, you're thinking the Man United game.
Yeah.
3-0 in half an hour.
Yeah, that's an exception.
They didn't. I don't think the management set them up in any other way or any different team talk. They were saying, should we go and play really well the first half hour? It just something happens, doesn't it? They don't ever go out to do that. I mean, killed United there.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's the obvious exception, but it wasn't exception.
When was that performance? Can we get that back? What were we doing that day?
The thing that's worrying me about Leicester most this year is they're almost replicating Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool team from about 3 years ago. No other cup competitions to worry about. So every Monday, day of training, right, we're playing this lot on Sunday, we're going to line up like this for 5 days to get used to it. And do you remember the game against Anfield in, I believe it was February of that season, we were 4-0 down after 20 minutes. I mean, Leicester are going to spend 5 days doing the homework. And Arsenal being, Wenger being Wenger, be like, we play it our way. We play our way to the best of our abilities. We could beat anyone in the world apart from about seven teams. But anyway, we ignore the Champions League. It doesn't matter. But we get the money.
That happened that day was Mertesacker trying to throw a dummy to Suarez. He was never going to buy.
No.
And that was in the first minute. Ozil getting tackled on the halfway, sitting there petulant. You don't get those at Anfield, is it?
Yeah.
You've played for Real Madrid. You've got every one of those there. This is different rules up here. They get the free kicks. They get it in their favour. And I thought we laid down and died that day. We're going back to that. But I've got a good feeling about Sunday. We've got a week to sort it out.
I think if we play our best 11, based on everyone who's fit and available at the moment, for me personally, that's checking goal. Monreal and Bellerin at fullbacks. In terms of best defenders, the way they work, I agree with Bernard completely. You play Koscielny next to Mertesacker.
Right.
Okay, you're right about Vardy tearing past him. In that case, you have to start Coquelin and make him tag himself to Vardy so the guy won't get anywhere. Have Coquelin do a John Obi Mikel job. The guy is always excellent against us, just block everything out. Stick Ramsey on the right wing. That's the big question. Who's going to play next to Coquelin? But you can't have Ramsey and Flamini. And Flamini, bless him, he's going to be wonderful at Lorient or Leighton Orient next year. He won't be at Arsenal. Giroud up front, Sanchez on the left, Ozil in the middle. If we play that team and then decide who's going to play next to next to
the Coquelin. Transfer window's closed. Who are you going to put in there?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to have
Colin Chambers.
Colin
Chambers.
It could be Chambers. It could be Oxlade-Chamberlain. It could be finally discovering something. But or maybe the long-term position for Ramsey is to be a central midfielder next to a proper sit-there defensive midfielder like Coquelin. But take Flamini out and put Coquelin in for a start and just let him rope himself to Vardy.
Yeah.
Mark Holmes has tweeted... if Leicester or Spurs win the league and Arsenal do not, what does that say about the last 10 years at the club? It's rather a general question, but in a way, I suppose you look at Spain, you see Atletico Madrid have won the title. You look at Germany, you see Dortmund have won the title. You look at England and you might say in May... that a team that does not have the financial resources of the big guns has managed to do it. Would that sort of puncture a bit of a myth that's built up over the last decade that Arsenal could not have won against Chelsea, City and United? And what would it say about Arsenal going forward under Wenger?
I think it's going to say something about the point I made earlier. With so much money coming in, the league or the Premier League is more competitive, it's more equal. You know, basically, unless you're Aston Villa, anybody can beat anyone else. And I don't think that, I think it's more the case this season than it has been in the past.
And do you think what that will continue?
With all the money coming in, it wouldn't surprise me, yes. Having said that, if we blow our chances this season, I think Wenger needs to look at himself very, very seriously and very, very harshly, because it'll be a huge chance wasted, in my view. Because if Leicester and Tottenham end up, or Tottenham end up winning it, I think we can say, yeah, to Wenger, you really should have won it this season, and it's such a chance that's been blown. And
you think we'd say it in such reasonable terms as that, by the way? I think it might be a bit writ large, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You're right. I mean, I'm thinking that... I was talking to a club photographer at Arsenal, and he sees me on the training ground every day. I said, nothing happening, transfer, last few days, no. He said, well, who is there? And I thought, have you bought into the club mentality? I said, who is there? I said, Charlie Austin. And he laughed in my face. I said, just to get him on, last few minutes of a few games, change it, chuck it in the mix... And after I'd said that, he went and scored the winner at Old Trafford. And I thought, it's not the Wenger way. And if Leicester won it with a guy who was playing for Fleetwood Town a few years ago, or the other mob won it with a guy who was playing for MK Dons and a fullback who was playing at Burnley win it, you've got to say, maybe you've got to look a bit closer to home. But maybe it would be too late for Wenger to change his ways and start saying, I want to scout down at the Orient next week.
They have recruited the Leicester scout. They've headhunted the Leicester scout who found the two good French players,
Kanté
and the winger Mahrez.
Yeah,
those two. So he's now on Arsenal staff, which because basically he's spotted good players
who
in France.
Cheap. Who are cheap?
Who are bargains?
Second division, they love.
And what is Gilles Grimaldi doing? That's what it's led.
Now, Gilles Grimaldi being a good friend of Wenger, but shit at what he does. Hang on, is it 12 years ago? I'm confused.
Yes, indeed. So possibly a more competitive league in which Arsenal should have made more of a fist of it.
Yeah.
Are you asking that question too, Kev? Are you asking Arsenal fans, Arsenal supporters, or the Arsenal board and owners? If it's the Arsenal board and owners, nothing's broke. It's fine. Don't sack Wenger or change the managerial structure for the sake of it, because we are still qualifying for the big money competition. We are still making enough prize money as we want to, and as we need to. Okay, not all that much, But having said that, the difference between third place and first place in the Premier League, it's something relatively cheap, like only £10 million, or what we call I'd know what you'd want to take out of season ticket holders for the Barcelona game or something like that, you know, not very much money at all. If you ask Arsenal fans, we're the people who's going to be absolutely gutted, but we're not supporters anymore. Mm. Supporters are the 60,000 who turn up and make a clean profit of £3 million for every home game. As long as we sell our 60,342 tickets, the job is done. Therefore, it doesn't matter whether Leicester win the league, whether the Harlem Globetrotters win the league, or whether it's Chelsea or Man City. If we finish in the top four, we sell the tickets, there's no way the manager will be changed at all.
No, but if we don't win the league, I really, really hope Wenger decides to retire when his contract ends in 2017.
Wenger, whose wife left him last summer and whose daughter is now at university and doesn't have to live with daddy. I think we're stuck with him for a while. Seriously, he's a human being. He's got nothing else to do. I don't think he does TV work for TF1 in France anymore. His life, he is literally the Arsene in Arsenal. He's got nothing else to live for. We're stuck with him until, God forbid, he does I don't know. Who died on their job?
Jock Stein.
That's it, Tommy Cooper. Yeah.
Okay. Right, let's... Theo Walcott's been at the club for 10 years and was made captain for the Chelsea game. Does this kind of gesture really send out a message to the opposition, or does it not really matter at all? Do you think it actually influenced the manager's decision regarding who to bring off in that game so he could get another centre-half on after Mertesacker's dismissal?
I don't think it made much difference, to be honest. I don't think the teammates looked to Walcott to provide any more leadership on the pitch as they would normally, and I don't think they would normally. I think it was just a goodwill gesture. Oh, you've been here 10 years, you know, be the captain for the day. That wasn't the reason we dropped points that day. I don't think it really mattered. What I would say about Theo is that after he's been here 10 years, if he didn't have pace, he'd have spent the last 10 years at someone like Norwich. Because apart from pace, I don't think he has an awful lot else. But that's a side issue. The captaincy thing on that day, I just can't see it as an important issue myself.
I heard, I'm not 100% sure, that Mertesacker came out with the armband and did all the necessary, then gave it to Theo, like in the warm-up.
Really?
Yeah.
And then Theo had his photo taken of the mascot. Yeah, so no, but Mertesacker's... Which was
worrying. Mertesacker, somebody said he came out the tunnel with it on, and then I did notice that Theo had it on upside down. Mm. And I'd like to say that flies in the face of Frank McClintock. But Frank McClintock never wore a captain's armband. He might have done in a European game when he had to, I don't know, but... It, to me, Theo Walcott wearing that after 10 years, I'm thinking, he's going to be... I like to see him against Barcelona in his 10th anniversary, because the only time I remember someone at Arsenal playing 10 years in Barcelona was, God bless him, George Armstrong, his testimonial over the road there. Mm. And, that's, you know, is Theo going to have a testimonial? I hope so. You know, get a few more quid, drop the price to about 50 quid on the night. And it's just 10 years, because I can remember him signing for Arsenal. My missus said, you've got to paint that front door, and it was January, and I thought, I'll finish it, and I ran to Arsenal training ground, and they did the job, the photo call, and I missed it, and I came back, and all the paint was blobby on the door, so yeah. It's not been a good 10 years for me, because she reminds me quite regularly about that, but no, I really think Theo, 10 years, think back, 5-2 over the road there, the Emirates beating them, that was fantastic, but I'm struggling to think, really, of too many...
Well, he had one good game against Chelsea when we beat them. I think it was just after Christmas.
Was that 5-3? No.
It was 3-1, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Chelsea pulled one back. Everyone went, oh, God. And we went straight up the other end and Walcott scored.
Yeah. I mean, I don't wish any harm. I wish he could just do it now. But, yeah, he benched against Bournemouth. What Bernard was saying about his pace, I had worry about this. Saw it with Michael Owen. All they've got really is pace.
Yeah.
Few hamstring injuries. Did you ever see Michael Owen off that really open his leg, really open those hamstrings and go? Yeah. No, he just got by on his reputation. Ferguson got him just to pop a few goals in. Because Michael Owen did know how to finish, which I don't think Theo does. He hasn't got that to his game. But when you talk about pace, I'd like to see Theo really go. And if it snaps, mate. But Theo, on half power, as you say, it's pace. And if he's not going to use it,
as I say, if he hasn't got pace, he'd have played for Norwich.
Well, that's harsh for Norwich. Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, we've got an emailed query from Sebastian Fourcuo. Apologies to Sebastian if I've got that wrong. He asks, do you think Koscielny has the required leadership qualities to be the permanent Arsenal captain now that Gabriel has taken Mertesacker's place in the team? If the answer is no, who would be your preferred choice? So, you know, let's just do a bit of what if. What if Mertesacker doesn't get back in the team? What if we get to the summer and Mikel Arteta is sold? We need the announcement of a new club captain who, in theory, is going to play most of the games. Is there an obvious candidate in the ranks?
If you ask me, there's only... Well, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. If you look at the Arsenal captaincy for the last 5-6 years, it's got some kind of curse in the sense that it becomes your last season at the club. You gave it to Fabregas, pissed off to Barcelona. Gave it to Van Persie, pissed off to Man United.
Gareth before that?
We'll just ignore him.
For Malin as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Tommy V went into the reserves, disappeared. Arteta, legs disappeared. Yeah. Mertesacker, he's going now. As a result, I personally think we should give it to David Ospina, so we send him and buy a proper reserve goalkeeper. But in terms of an actual leader, for me, there's only one choice, and he's going to be the centre of our team, as I think he is at the moment, although I'm a fan club of one. It's got to be Aaron Ramsey as our skipper.
Interesting. Mark?
No, I'm not buying that. Bloody Welshman, Captain Arsenal. No, we've had some more.
Dave Bowen did it, I'm sure, years ago. All right, they're kids. No, I thought was going to answer it until you said in the ranks. There's no one in the ranks, I can see.
Right.
I think you've got to go and get yourself a captain. But is it that important? You know, we talked about everybody has to take this responsibility on the pitch. Mm. I see Flamini is the only guy who's shouting, but... You know, after you've just done a two-footed tackle, you should have been in the stands. I don't know whether it leaves you to shout at other players. He seems to have that cajoling nature with other players. I'm sure David Lovett is going to build it around Flamini for the next 5 years. I don't see anyone there. I don't see anyone there. And as you say, Fabregas was the one at a young age. You thought, this is going to be it. We all believed it. I'm sure we did. Think he's going to be a guy, build the team around him. And we know where that went. I don't know. I mean, anyone with a... Half a memory will think of Tony Adams, obviously. That's your Arsenal captain. That's your benchmark. And before that, Frank McClintock. So to find anyone like that, I think, you know, I don't have any other clubs. I mean, if you ask me who Man City's captain was, is it Yaya? I don't know. Because company when he plays. But at the moment, yeah, Yaya. I mean, he'd sulk around. Mm. I don't think many clubs have that real out and out captain. They simply give it for star player. I can't think of Liverpool's captain. Is it Jordan Henderson?
Jordan Henderson.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you think of an era when the captain, maybe it's not so important now, I don't know. But I, you know, I'm living in the past and thinking, I'd love someone, I don't want to look him in the eye if I pulled out that tackle, I didn't go for that header, and I wasn't, you know, if I was a fullback and I was found behind my centre, imagine being a fullback being found behind Tony Adams when he's got his arm up.
Yeah.
You know, what he'd do to you in the dressing room, you know, it wouldn't. There's no, maybe fear's not a thing, maybe it's just not encouraged now. But
best of a bad bunch, Peter Cech.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He can't have a goal.
But exactly, not if that puts him off. If he starts worrying about other things, because let's be honest, I mean, we haven't been that negative tonight, but Cech, it's just that time when people get that free shot from 25 yards. It's all right, Cech's there. And you see it bounce just in front of him. And that's a very big positive this season. Mm. Maybe you're right, David, maybe he's the man, but I'd hate to pass that poison chalice on. And,
I'd agree with that point. I don't think there's an obvious candidate. From the current personnel, for the reasons I gave before, you know, I think it'll improve Koscielny's get back to the standard Koscielny was. I'd like to see Mertesacker back in the team, and I'd make him captain next season because I think he's the best captain of a poor bunch of candidates, if you like.
Okay. Just to put my own opinion in for once, I think Francis Coquelin is a possibility.
Or
Nacho going forward? In a way, I'll say on this subject a bit. In an ideal world for me, Kieran Gibbs would have never got injured, would have played and played and played and been the Arsenal captain. Mm. I think it would have been excellent. But, you know, you've obviously got to go for a guy who's got his regular place there.
Mm. Okay. Right, well, we did make one signing in the January transfer window, which was Mohamed Elneny. He was on the bench against Stoke. He played in the FA Cup against Burnley. Any theories why we haven't seen anything of him since?
I thought it was because he didn't play at the weekend because his wife had a baby, and he was at
some
the birth
paternity leave, effectively.
Yeah, basically. Whether it's true or not, I can't guarantee.
But hang on a minute. No. Surely, if that's the case, he just gets on, scores a goal, and does that celebration with a dummy. Isn't that an idea?
Didn't I mean? He's obviously been scouted. He's been watched playing Champions League football. Was it Basel he came from?
Yes.
Yeah. But Wenger, he played against Burnley, looked skillful, but lost about three or four 50-50 tackles. And Wenger went, he needs strengthening up. So maybe the answer to that is down the gym, which is a bit... We thought, you know, one signing of outfield player all season, surely it's someone who's good to go. Not well, someone who's going to be beefed up by next August.
It was. I'm not brown-nosing for the sake of it, but Kev summed it up perfectly in his editorial after that game. You see that game, you go, next season.
Yeah.
And so he did things like shooting from range.
Yeah.
No.
That'll be coached out of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We don't do that at
absolutely,
Arsenal.
Yeah. You're not one of the four shooters. It's not your turn, no.
Right, well, a bit of public information here, because we've got a tweet from someone whose name I'm going to attempt. It's Lukas Patak. So, once again, apologies to Lukas if I've got that wrong. He says, can you explain the club email to season ticket holders? Myself not being one, I don't understand the fuss. Was the club in the wrong? Thanks. So, this is a reference to the email that the club sent out informing season ticket holders that the value of the seven cup ties that they paid for when they bought their season ticket was actually more than they paid, and that the club would be claiming the difference, approximately £20 on average, when people renewed their season tickets. This is because Barcelona was a Grade A game, there'd been an earlier Grade A game against Bayern Munich, and the way the maths worked was we owed the club money. The mitigation for the club is that the previous summer they'd actually refunded us because of this principle. But predictably, season ticket holders were in uproar. Ethically, do we think that the club was right, or were they out of order and why?
Ethically, I think they were unwise to try and introduce the additional charge in the first place. But I was pleased that they've since decided not to. A point I'd make about ticket prices is that the AGM, you mentioned I was a shareholder, at the AGM every year, Ivan Gazidis produces a chart when people start moaning about price increases to their season tickets or seats. He produces this chart and says words to the effect of, despite these seating price increases, the proportion of income coming from tickets is falling year after year after year. And that's because sponsorship revenue is dramatically increasing, television revenue is dramatically increasing. So with that, I would suggest that ticket pricing is actually less important to the club. They get less money from it. So therefore, I would like to see the club actually drop prices by a significant level. You know, even a tenner a game or something like that would be at least a sign that, you know, we're doing this for our loyal fans who turn up game after game. Because, as I say, you know, seat prices doesn't bring Arsenal, as an overall proportion, the money it used to anyway, even when they increase prices. So why not just reduce them and, you know,
Are they worried that the kind of the riffraff, the hyperlay, will get to in the stadium and they'll have a bit more stewarding to do or whatever? Because I was just thinking then, as Burnham's talking, I want to think, have you heard Leicester games on the radio? I was driving along listening to Leicester v Liverpool. Jeez, I can't listen to that. It's the commentator's shouting above the noise of the fans. They bring those plastic clappy things in, but they don't mind. They don't think, oh, that looks uncool. They make this cacophony all game. And I think, in a part of me, I'm saying, wouldn't that be great if they won the league? Would anyone turn around and go, you know what, they price it so these people come in who are passionate football fans and make a racket? I'm just thinking, what will it take would Leicester have to win it 5 years running, or teams with the noisiest fans win it 5 years running before everyone said, you know what, there's something in having a passion. You know these fans they have at some of these grounds. Why don't we try that? I mean, that would be me. That's my fantasy, you know, for Arsenal to see that, because going back to, you know, as we're very near Highbury in this recording, remember when the boxes were built on top of the clock end? There was this great little two-way thing I thought was so healthy. The guys, the gooners on the clock end, you say, yuppies, yuppies, give us a wave. And the guys in the boxes used to kind of, come in my box, it's really awful funny watching these working class oiks down below. And it, because the yuppies were in the minority. But now people go along and say, well, where's all those amusing football fans? You're sitting in their seats, pal. And it's just, that's one thing that, maybe it's just an old fella going on here, but that's one thing I think, that dimension. Imagine if Arsenal just lost it because the players, you know, one player comes out and says, I went up to Leicester, I couldn't even give instructions across the pitch. Go to our ground. And it's just so easy and so comfortable for the opposition.
There are three words that sum up Arsenal Football Club in one fell swoop: supply and demand. I remember I've been going to Arsenal since 1988 when I was 7 years old. So it's what, my 28th year now. And 5 years ago, I was in a traffic accident and I was in hospital in sort of June, July time. And I missed the season ticket renewal. And I got a letter from the club saying, you know, you've got 2 days, otherwise you're going to lose your season ticket. And I wrote an email to them, and I copied in a couple of newspapers whose editors that I know, saying, I'd like to do that, but I'm actually hospital bound at the moment with a third of my skull missing. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. And I got a handwritten letter from Ivan Gazidis saying, dear David, we're so incredibly sorry to hear that such a loyal, how do we spell it? Is it Gunner or Gooner? Gunner? Gunner? Yeah, okay. Loyal Gunner, having such a tragic accident. And I'll make sure that you're going to be mentioned and thanked in the programme for the first game of the season. Hope to see you well soon. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, your deadline's Tuesday. Oh, my love, I'm...
Whoa, that was touching. Yes.
Oh, I wasn't ready for that. I've got that, yeah.
And you said the guy wasn't all heart, didn't he?
You know, he's one of the nicest, most less bitter South
touching. We should have had the bit of Simon Bates, our tune music, to that, shouldn't we, really? That's lovely.
But seriously, it's supply and demand. I mean, we're in the nicest part of London that any club in the city is. It is the second most visited city in the world at the moment after New York City. And I don't know, I went on a holiday 2 years ago going to see baseball games in different cities of America.
Yeah.
People come to England, they want to see soccer. Yeah. You know, do you go to Tottenham? No, there's no tube station. Okay, do you go to West Ham? No. So, let them do next year in the Olympic Stadium. No, Arsenal's the place to be. And, you know, they don't care whether it's a gooner, whether it's a gunner, whether it's a Brit. No. Whoever it is, if the ticket is sold, well, then a contribution to the 60,000 tickets has been made.
Well, it just shows that I'm in cuckoo land thinking, will they think an atmosphere counts? Golden Sullivan at West Ham are looking at what Arsenal's done here and said, 50, 60,000, soulless place. People come in, drop the wife off shopping in Westfield, and you can get the central line back into a theatre land and see, you know, Les Mis in the evening, yeah.
Yeah, but we're theatre in disguise.
Oh, no, we're not.
Yes, we are. So.
I mean, to be fair, I do think the atmosphere has improved a bit this season. You know, it's not as dead as it has been in the past.
But, you know, one time, on this atmosphere thing, Arsenal played Cardiff City in a Youth Cup match few years back, and they said they expected 5,000. I went to take pictures there, and the kickoff was delayed, and it went 5, 10, 15, and people were just coming in. And they
because you could pay on the gate?
People were paying on the gate, and there were these people shouting at me. For the first time as a photographer in the Emirates, I was thinking, blimey, you know, boy, we can't sit, yes, I won't argue with him, I'll sit down a bit low. And there was this girl saying, oi, mate, thinking I was a steward in my photo booth, can I smoke in here? What? And it was just, this Welsh guys were sitting there, so I'd given a bit of verbal, and it was, I think there was a bit of racism going on. The guy got up, and it was kicking off a bit. I thought, all right, nobody's going to turn around and say, that's a blueprint we're after. But there was this frisson, should we say, that I've never witnessed since or had before. And, you know, all right, I'm a socialist here, but I'm saying if a few people off the, you know, Packington Estate and the Marquis Estate and Essex Road could get into Arsenal and just give us a bit of a, you know, just someone who's happy to be there.
Going back to Kev's actual question, just to finish this point off, and something that Bernard mentioned in passing to start with, there were, what, 30,000 season ticket holders, right? And it was going to be an extra £20 each, that's £600,000. Take off the corporation tax, or what, between 22 and 26%. Mm. The club are only going to make 400, £450,000 out of that. You do realise that's the week wages for three players. Ozil, Welbeck and Walcott, or Sanchez and Walcott, you know. Therefore, they can afford to live without that £450,000. Sad, yeah. There we go.
I will just mention here, because it's the one contributor that hasn't had their question read out. Arsene's Goons via Twitter asked, do you think anything can be done for the lack of atmosphere at home games? So I think we've kind of covered that. However, before we do finish, I was fascinated to read this on the Arsenal website in the ticket information for the Spurs-Arsenal fixture. It read, following incidents involving a minority of people in the Arsenal supporters section at White Hart Lane after the Capital One Cup match in September, the Arsenal allocation of tickets has been reduced for the Premier League match at Spurs on Saturday 5th of March. Both clubs, together with representatives from the Metropolitan Police and the Safety Advisory Group, have decided that the front two rows of the upper tier in the visitors' section of White Hart Lane should remain unsold. Therefore, the Arsenal allocation of tickets for this fixture is reduced to 2,700 from the usual 3,000. Just to interject here, as far as I am concerned, the upper tier overhangs the away section of the lower tier, so there are Arsenal fans below those front two rows. I suspect I know what this is really about, but I believe, certainly there are snaps on the Offside website of the incidents.
Yeah.
Were you the one that was there taking
them? No, Mark Atkins was taking those, yeah.
Do you recall exactly what it was about?
Well, just ripping up the, you know, the whatever the, I mean,
it was the advertising board, wasn't it?
It wasn't advertising, it was one club, one love, and all this to dare is to win, all this, you know, we're as bad as anyone to write slogans up there, you know, when the Kop used to have their own stuff, but now people go look at an old retro picture of the Kop and say, let's write something that's, you know, just, it's just, but yeah, they just ripped up those panels.
Were the panels in themselves, do you think, dangerous? Were they items that could be thrown at opposition supporters?
No. I mean, I was in the lower tier that day, and it was perfectly safe. What was unsafe was keeping the away fans in the ground for half an hour after the final whistle, because that gave time for all the Tottenham Neanderthal fans to come round to the away exits. We all came out at the same time. It was perfectly obvious who was an Arsenal fan and who wasn't. And there was far more likely to be trouble because they kept us locked inside. At least when they let Arsenal fans out immediately, we can all just slip away, go to whichever train station you want to go to. And it's a bit hairy getting out of there normally, I would accept that. But it was even worse after the League Cup tie, you know, because all their mob had time to get round to the away exit and could see who was an Arsenal fan and who wasn't.
And well, a rarity, we've won over there. And, Arsenal fans, I mean, here's me, I kind of trying to pretend, oh, we're frowning on this behaviour, but I was overjoyed when I saw it myself. They smash the toilets up the Emirates every year and do everything like that. But Bernard was there and he was down low, didn't feel threatened. I went to a Tottenham game with Tottenham, I said it again, recently, just after that, and the stewards were having a big confab and I just listened in and they were saying, the lads there, I mean, there's that massive control box there and they're looking and the lads tried to take the jackets off each other and swap and confuse the police, but what the main lad was wearing these bright red shoes, spotted as soon as he came out.
Right.
It wasn't quite the train robbery, was it? We didn't think it through too much. But, yeah, it's just tip for tat. Are Arsenal going to take 300 off next year because the toilet's getting smashed up over the Emirates? I don't know. I mean, the FA Cup, aren't you meant to give 10% or something like that, the FA Cup?
Well,
would be 6,000.
I think the police said we could only handle so many.
Yeah.
In that kind of instance.
Who would be the Arsenal representative they spoke to? Would it be Lois and Co from the AISA?
I believe I did take part in a meeting, although, interestingly enough, I remember reading Tim Stillman actually attended, presumably because he did write an account of the actual Capital Cup game, saying how bad it was. Mm. So I'm assuming possibly ISA recommended that... he would attend as someone who was actually there.
Mm. I'm just amazed. Sorry, I mean, David's saying he's a younger man, started in 1988. I got off school, got on the 4 o'clock train to White Hart Lane in May 1971. So there was none of this 2,700 allocation. I must have been one of 27,000 Arsenal fans in the ground. Yeah. And on the pitch that night, it was... that's the kind of time I brought up into watching the Gooners over there. But no, it's... do you get the feeling going? There's a little stirring, a little more Arsenal getting a little mob together?
Well, I think what has happened is the herd as such have all got kids.
Right.
And they've kind of succeeded them in a sense, because most of the troublemakers, as you wish to call them now, who get into fights, or certainly there is an element of a younger group.
Yeah.
There are also the old guys who occasionally will also still get into
trouble.
Well,
you know, I was the guy who came over from L'Équipe magazine, who loves everything about English football, and I was with him on a Saturday night. We were staggering around. We went past Highbury Magistrates, and he said, "Oh, is this where those guys came from? We met last time." I said, "What?" We were in the Wetherspoons pub opposite the Town Hall, and there were these young guys giving it loads of verbal, like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I said, you're happy, what are you celebrating? He said, "Oh, he got off." And this kid just described the most innocuous incident. Some bloke stood up, leaving Stoke, an Arsenal fan, stood in his way, said, "Sorry, mate, can't see." And he just gave him a little push. The bloke was drunk, fell over. And the steward saw it, and the judge threw it straight out of court when he got to Highbury Magistrate. So they were celebrating that. These lads from Boreham Wood said, "Oh, you must have gone the great days. My dad's told me all about that when you." And I'm not saying, you could push anyone, do anything you wanted, but just for that, tell a guy once you're in my way, then push him, and he falls over, and it's a court case. It's just gone too far that way, isn't it?
It's a different game, no question. Well, we've been chatting for over an hour. There is more to talk about, but we've actually got to wrap up. So I will just plug the current issue with the Gooner. It came out in January, and the last day of sale is this coming Sunday at the Leicester match. It has features on Arsenal penalties, memories of the Arsenal 87-88 season, a piece on Alan Ball written by Bernard opposite me.
Look forward to that.
Recollections of a season at the end of the 1950s when the Gunners almost won the league. And a now rather dated piece speculating that Pep Guardiola might not necessarily end up at Eastlands. Oh, well, you can't win them all. A new issue will go on sale at the FA Cup fifth round game against Hull. It is £2.50, available from sellers outside the ground and from the online Gooner website. With that plug over, a reminder that you can contact us via Twitter at Gooner Podcast and via email goonerpodcast@gmail.com. I think I mentioned everyone who submitted contributions this evening. Hope I didn't miss anybody else. Anybody out? And with that, it is goodbye from David.
Good evening, all.
Bernard.
Goodbye.
And Mark.
Bye, listeners.
We will be back with another edition in March, when we hope to be discussing a title challenge that is still very much alive and kicking. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Way-hey!